Twin Cities, and welcome to the Pet Connection Show here on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Kathy Menard, your host here on the Pet Connection Show. Dr. Nicole Perrault, our wonderful co-host, is off. Not off, but like out of the state of Minnesota and the state of Wisconsin as well. She's down in Orlando, and she's at a conference, actually a veterinarian conference. But she'll be back next week, and I can hardly wait to hear all about everything she's learning down there. I have no clue what the topics are, but you and I will learn about it together next week when she's back on. But it's me and you and our wonderful guest here that will be calling in a few minutes. But I just wanted to say good morning to everybody. Thanks for listening. I skipped out on you last week. I played hooky last week at the very last minute. I spent part of the show and part of the day with a beautiful little baby girl named Charlie Lynn. And if some of you have been following what I've been talking about every once in a while or who just know me in general, I became a grandmother right before Christmas. And so I was able on the 22nd of December to buzz down to La Crosse, Wisconsin, you know, to see my son and daughter-in-law and the new little granddaughter, and hold her when she was just like maybe six hours old. And then I was able to go last weekend, last Sunday, which is why I played hooky with all of you. But I had an opportunity where staffing just worked out perfectly and accidentally. And, you know, sometimes that's when that happens, you just sort of have to take advantage of that. But I had a wonderful staff person who, Suzette, who helped me out at the last minute. And I had to kind of work around her availability, but was able to dash off to La Crosse again and visit Chris and Sadie, and then my little granddaughter, Charlie Lynn. Pet appreciators, I cannot tell you how heartwarming it is to become a grandmother. And I know this is a pet show, so I'm not going to spend my whole time talking about this. But I am so in love with her, and I know you know what I mean. You know, just holding that little tiny baby girl, listening to her breathe, you know, the baby breaths, the little tiny sweet little puffs of baby breath, and the little queen, and the wiggles, and you know how the facial expressions change just sort of accidentally every like 5 seconds, and you know, just gazing at the teeny tiny fingers and toes. I'm just so in love with her. Pet appreciators, I'm so in love with little Charlie Lynn, and I can hardly wait to see her again. Not quite sure when I'll dash down to La Crosse again, but I just had to say that I played hooky on you guys and went to see the little grandbaby. But anyways, our guest today is somebody who calls in every single year at this time, Jason Rice. And some of you may know him from a long time ago as a TV newscaster down here in the Twin Cities. And then he's moved up to Duluth and was a newscaster there, but also very involved in the John Bear Grease Sled Dog Marathon. He's been a musher before. And then for many years now, he's been on the board of directors, which is the capacity that he's called in on. You know, every time he's called in to share the history of the John Bear Grease Sled Dog Marathon, and, you know, to go over all the event information, to talk about what happens with the dogs, to talk about the routes, you know, all that kind of stuff. He's always been a board member. But this year, he decided, I didn't know this until the last minute when I was, you know, sort of organizing him to call again, because the John Bear Grease Sled Dog Marathon is a week from today up in Duluth, starting in Duluth, I believe, although I'll let him clarify that. But he's going to be a musher again. And so when we get him on air, it'll be interesting to hear information from a musher's perspective instead of a board member's perspective. And I'm really curious to find out why he decided to make that switch again. And I believe that we do have Jason Rice, on the phone with us. And Jason, I just want to say good morning, and I am so excited to talk to you. And I hope you're doing well. So good morning, Jason, and welcome to the Pet Connection Show again.
Good morning, Kathy. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yes, I was telling everybody, you know, if they remember previous shows over the many years here that you've called in, you've always called in the capacity of a board member and have given us a lot of history and a lot of information about the race. not just the history part, but also just day-to-day what's going to be happening as the mushers prepare, etc. But I was telling everybody that you are now going to be in the sled again. You're going to be a musher this year. You're not going to be wearing the board member hat, but you're going to be wearing the musher hood, so to speak. So I just want to know.
Musher hood and and earmuffs and a scarf and anything I can possibly throw on there to stay warm.
Yeah. Jason, I know you've done it in the past, but why? I mean, it's probably always been in your blood. And once you've done it once, you probably always think about doing it again. But what was that like for you? What was that thought process? When did it happen? Why did you decide to participate again?
So it's been 15 years since I was last on the runners on a sled, on the back of a sled in the John Bear Grease. And the last time that I ran, I was in the mid-distance race, which is about 120 miles. And I ran that actually three times, finished it all three times. But always in the back of my mind was that I did want to just someday, somehow, I wanted to scratch off for my own personal pride and scratch off that one to-do list thing to actually mush in and complete a John Bear Grease full marathon. And so through a bunch of happenstance, it looks like it is happening this year. I'm actually on my way to a training run right now.
Oh, fun. Okay, so you've always wanted to do it. This year it works out. But there's got to be like, you know, I'm just trying to think. You know the process already.
What clicked? What snapped in me?
Well, but passion, I'm assuming, but probably a lot of other things that just kind of worked out, maybe things with your family or work, where you're just able to do it. It can't be something that you just kind of prepare a little bit for on the weekends. It can't be.
No, and it's not. In fact, I would say that it's actually, in many respects, it's equally and in many ways more challenging than getting ready for the race as one of the volunteers on the board or one of the hundreds of volunteers that we have working on the race. Their help is absolutely crucial. But to be able to lead and basically be the driver of this magical team of four-legged spirits in front of you and make it several hundred miles through the wilderness, it takes a ton of dedication, and I don't even have sled dogs, so that's a whole separate topic. But I'm actually I'm using a rented team, if you will, and so I'm not the dad, the person who feeds them and cares for them all year long. So I've had to attempt to get to know them as well as possible in just a few short months this fall and into the winter.
You know, that's what I was thinking about because, you know, when you, pet appreciators, if you go on the John Bear Grease Sled Dog Marathon, like, website, which is very, very informative, and I just want to say, if you are a teacher out there or a parent who would like to pass this on to your child's teacher, there's a lot of audio, written information, visual stuff to help teachers, you know, teach about just the history of John Bear Grease, who's just a historical figure here in Minnesota. But you can also read about the mushers. They, you know, they submit their own bios and that kind of thing. And a lot of them own, you know, like kennels where they raise these dogs, and many of them are used for sled dog racing. But obviously not every musher, you know, can do that, you know, dedicate their whole life to that. And so how did you, I mean, you are so interconnected, Jason, with that whole sled dog, you know, network or whatever, what was the process of like picking a kennel or picking a group of dogs? Like I don't think the kennel probably picked the dogs for you. They probably picked a bunch of dogs maybe, and you kind of worked with how you interacted with the personalities and how they responded to you. I mean, there's got to be a lot with that.
There is. It's probably not quite as mysterious a science as people might believe. So the Reddington Kennel, Ryan Reddington won the Bear Grease last year. And to put this into perspective, his business actually is mushing. He is a professional dog musher. His family business is in Alaska, where they take tourists out on rides on sled dog tours. So then he married a gal from here in northern Wisconsin, actually, and they spend part of the year down here and the rest of the year up in Alaska. And so they have a very large pool of dogs to pick from. But a lot of those dogs are not what you would classify as racing caliber dogs. They love to pull people, very friendly and social, and love to go about 6-7 miles an hour, and will do so quite faithfully. The dogs that Ryan uses for racing are trained to run, you know, more like the 10.5-11 mile an hour range. And there's a smaller pool of those. There's a pool of about 30-some, I would say about 32 dogs that are of that racing caliber, of which we're going to be racing between Ryan's team this year and my team. 24 of those dogs, 12 in each of our teams, will be running. And I've got, I guess, kind of the good fortune of having a bunch of the dogs that were in his Bear Grease Championship winning team last year that brought him to the finish line in a record time.
You lucky
so
duck, Jason.
I wound up lucky.
Yes, you lucky duck.
Yeah, and the process as far as picking dogs, part of it has to do with Ryan's sensitivity to the fact that I am not their dad. I'm not the head of the household, so to speak, who's feeding them all year and earning all those brownie points that happen from rubs and loves and
you know what, Jason?
Food and water.
I hear the music. I apologize. I didn't hear it at first. Please stay on the line, and we're going to pick up your sentence on the other side, okay?
Hi, this is Laura, and I want to tell you about my family's favorite thing. It's our wood stove. We bought it about 14 years ago from Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces. And see, the wood stove has actually paid for itself because we can keep the main area that we live in toasty warm with this great moist heat. But more important than saving money, it has actually improved our lives. Having a fire simplifies life. It provides comfort. It sort of takes the chill out of winter.
I'm Peter Solak. In 1977, I started Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, and I experienced the simple joy of warming myself by a fire. I also realized that the place and the way we embrace fire has evolved in a diversity of forms and styles. So at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, we have brought together the widest selection of our fireplace products and technical knowledge in the Twin Cities. Our mission is to use our knowledge to help you choose the design and function that is right for you and your home.
Visit Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces today and find the right fire for you.
Atheists Talk is the radio show for free-thinking Minnesotans. Listen on Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock. Every Sunday, we bring you science, philosophy, politics, and plain old fun from an atheist's point of view. Visit our website at minnesotaatheists.org for more details. Tune in to Atheists Talk Radio Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's good radio without the good book.
Imagine your dream carpet installed for free. The Home Depot offers all-inclusive installation on minimum purchases of $699. That's removal of your old carpet, basic furniture moving, and stairs. So the dream carpet you want comes at the price you were expecting. Free carpet installation that's actually free. The Home Depot. More saving. More doing. Valid only on showroom carpet price $1 or more per square foot. Specialty items may be priced separately. License numbers including BC147263 available at homedepot.com/license numbers.
Hi, I'm Matt McNeil, and I want to encourage you to join me weekday afternoons at 3 p.m. for The Matt McNeil Show. It's a Twin Cities-based full hour of talk where we discuss what's going on in the state and in the nation from a Minnesota perspective. We'll be joined by a lot of great guests, and we'll take your phone calls. Interact with us on the Twitter page, at Matt McNeil Show, the Facebook page, Progressive Citizen X, The Matt McNeil Show, and on email, comment at am950radio.com. The Matt McNeil Show, weekday afternoons at 3, right here on AM 950.
Moe's Tax Service, family-owned and operated since 1971, providing a full spectrum of tax preparation and associated services. Think about it. Why would you take your most important financial information to a franchise operation with a cheap basic package that goes up dramatically once you're in the door? You can find out all you need to know about Moe's by visiting www.moestax.com. That's M-O-H-S-Tax.com. Or call them at 612-721-2026. Don't be a blockhead. Go to the professionals at Moe's Tax Service.
Thanks. Thanks for sticking with us, Pet Appreciators. And if you're just joining us on the Pet Connection Show, Jason Rice from Duluth, Minnesota, is our guest for the whole show today. I'm so excited. He's called in many, many times before as a board member of the John Bear Grease Sled Dog Marathon, but today as a musher. So he's going to be on the sled behind those, what he calls four-legged spirits, which I just love that quote. I wrote that down, Jason. I just love that characterization of the pups. But anyways, I didn't hear the music. My fault. Too engrossed in our conversation. I interrupted you, and I want you to finish your thought.
Sure. So I think we were kind of talking about the subject of how did I end up with which dogs, since I'm using a kennel of another competitive musher's of his resources, his dogs, that are very highly trained and very, very capable fast dogs. So the way this worked out at the finish line last year, quite frankly, Ryan said to me, and I was there to congratulate him when he won, and I was the announcer at the finish line, you know, letting everybody know that here he was setting a record time. And he just turned to me and said, he said, "You're going to run these dogs next year." And I thought, okay, right. I've heard he's a little delirious. He's sleep deprived. That can't be right. A couple months later, he reaches out to me and says, "You still thinking of running my dog?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, I guess. I didn't realize you were serious." He says, "I'm serious." A couple months later, he checks in with me again, sends me pictures of his dogs running over the summertime in Alaska. And it started to get really real. He said, "Dogs are looking good. Are you ready?" And I had made up my mind. Yep, I'm ready. And so I guess the fast forward to today, now we've been trained, of which 24 will make the cut. And Ryan is probably going to have the choicest pick of the dogs, but he is really works where they would not accept somebody who was not the dad.
Exactly. And Jason, you're kind of cutting in and out a little bit.
Okay. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Can you still hear me? You might be driving. I know that you said you were probably.
I am. So I will warn your listeners and you, Kathy. I'll call right back if for some reason it gets dropped. But I am driving out to do a 50-mile training run today.
How many of us can say that? I think most of us are going to be like, well, once we're done with this little errand or whatever we're doing, we're going right back into our little caves, not caves, but our warm little homes.
I'm going to lie. There are times when I wish that's what I was going to be doing. But if I want to achieve this goal, I've just got to be ready for whatever the conditions are. And right now it's fairly cold. Right now we're hanging right at zero as I drive through Superior, Wisconsin, heading over toward the Ashland area in the Shawamigan National Forest, and that's where we'll be doing about a 50-mile training run today.
It sounds beautiful. How long does it take to prep the dogs for that training run, and how long does it take to do that 50 miles?
So as far as prep, the dogs will already be fed and watered before I've gotten there, so that's a nice...
Okay.
They need to get plenty of hydration in them before hitting the trail, and especially in dry conditions, they need to get some good hydration. Then we will harness.
We lost you a little bit there, Jason. Can you hear us?
I hear you just fine.
Okay.
Sorry, Kathy.
No.
So. You hearing me now?
Yeah, kind of in and out, but I can hear you now. So they're already be fed and hydrated, so they'll be hooked on the sleds, ready to go. How long does it take to do that 50 miles through the woods there?
We're going to traditionally keep the dogs at about a 10.5 to 11 mile an hour pace. So it will take about 4.5 hours to do that run.
Okay. Yep, that's the day. Yep, and then getting them back into their kennels and probably fed and watered again, I'm assuming.
Go through and...
Yeah.
Feet, you check the wrists, et cetera.
Right, exactly. Yep. Now, Jason, how many stops? I know that they shortened the race a little bit this year. And from what I can tell, it was mostly due to, you know, because this race is a little earlier in the year than some of the other races throughout the country. And then, of course, the Iditarod, many people have to qualify or pre-qualify or whatever to race in the Iditarod. And I know that the John Bear Grease Sled Dog Marathon is one of the pre-qualifiers or qualifiers, whatever the correct term is. But I know that they shortened the race because some of the mushers were concerned that they just weren't able to get the training in before this end of January race. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. That's kind of a trend that we were even seeing while I was serving on the board of directors. The trend is that more people are having to work, and they're having to work more longer hours and read.
Yep, it broke up again.
Okay, they just don't have the time to train for a 400-mile race. So the challenge is to be able to have enough time to put on 1,000 to 2,000 miles in preparation for a 400-mile race, and it's more difficult.
It makes perfect sense to me, and I was thinking that it was more... Yeah, I guess I wasn't even, like, thinking about just the whole people work. They have their own lives. You know, they have to work in between all this training. I was thinking more like maybe the lack of snow, you know, to get the dogs acclimated to that.
No, this year we've had plenty of snow to the north here. The trails, as far as the Bear Grease Trail, which is the North Shore snowmobile trail running up the shore of Lake Superior, it's quite thick and lush. It's in excellent, excellent condition this year. Probably the best it's been in a number of years. The real issue is mushers and their families and time commitments. And, you know, I guess I'm of the good fortune that I'm running with a kennel that this is all they do is sled dogs. This is what they do for a living. So my dogs have about 2,000 miles on them already this year of training.
Wow.
I would venture to say that that's probably a third to 50% more than most teams coming into this race.
Yeah, I would imagine. 2,000 miles of training? Yeah, how many of us can say that again? So,
how many of us would want to say that? Oh, my goodness.
No kidding. How many of us would not be hospitalized after that?
Right.
But but I was reading a little bit about Ryan Reddington and his business, and I remember his name from last year. And we do have about 50 seconds here before we go into the next commercial break. But he... He ran in the Iditarod, didn't he, last year?
He did, and actually he wound up having to, what we call scratch, or stop, drop out, about halfway through the race. His dogs actually wound up drinking water that was given to Ryan by a volunteer that was in a container that at one point had diesel fuel in it. So it was low level, but they got sick, and he had to stop there. The dogs did recover.
Yes. Oh, my God. Scary. Absolutely scary. So, but I'm glad everything worked out okay. We're going into a commercial break. Jason is staying with us, Pet Appreciators. I can hardly wait to hear what's next with him.
Hi, Matt McNeil for Rudy Luther Toyota. You know I purchased my vehicles with Rudy Luther because I love my Toyota Sienna, but it's the extra things which make me a loyal Rudy Luther customer. A great example, the Luther Advantage Card. With every new and used vehicle purchased, you'll get 3 years of 10 cents off per gallon of gas at Holiday Station stores and $5 off the Works car washes. The Luther Advantage Cards keep you happy in your Rudy Luther vehicle. Find out more at Rudy Luther Toyota, 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Native Roots Radio is proud to announce we've added an extra hour.
Yeah, Chuske, 1 hour goes by too fast.
That's right, Uncle Curtis.
I'll have extra time to share important information about our sacred animals.
And report national and native news from all over the country and Canada.
This new hour is sponsored by Robbins Kaplan, LLP, rewriting the odds for their clients for over 80 years.
We are awake.
Minnesota's very best appliance shoppers choose Warner Stellion, home of the lowest price guarantee and trusted free services. Warner Stellion's in-store specialists will help you choose what's best for you. If it's worth considering, Warner Stellion has it. And now through the 23rd, we guarantee our prices lowest. Save more with our trusted free delivery, basic installation, haul away, and no interest financing. Don't wait. Get in on special appliance savings now through January 23rd from Minnesota's own Warner Stellion.
Tom Hartman here for All Energy Solar. One of the myths about solar is that you save more if you wait, but waiting to switch can actually cost you more. While tax rebates make solar affordable, those rebates are often limited and decrease over time. So when you wait, you risk losing some of the incentives that make solar so easy to afford today. And besides, the sooner you get your All Energy Solar system, the sooner you reduce or even eliminate that high electricity bill. Make the switch today at allenergysolar.com.
Hey, it's Hunter from the brand new 4 o'clock program, the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. And if there's one thing y'all know that I always look forward to, it's a good party. And I couldn't be more excited for the 2019 Blue State Fall. Finally, a chance to celebrate the work we did destroying Trump and the Republicans and keeping Minnesota the true blue state. But come celebrate our victory with fellow progressives, radio hosts, and politicians at the 2019 Blue State Fall, Saturday, March 2nd at the Blaisdell in Minneapolis. VIP will get started at 5 p.m. with general admission at 6 p.m. I'll be there along with my Minnesota Progressive Repartee co-hosts Doug Padgett and Brett Johnson, along with Matt McNeil, Ellie Krug, Robert Pilot, and the whole Native Roots Radio crew, and many other AM 950 personalities. Tom Hartman will be joining us, as well as a lot of exciting politicians and speakers. As always, the attire is blue jeans to ball gown, so let's party at the Blue State Ball on Saturday, March 2nd at the Blaisdell and celebrate the Blue Wave. Tickets available now at am950radio.com.
With your AM 950 weather, this is Eric Nelson. Today, expect a 30% chance of snow with highs near 12 and lows around negative 3. Monday, a 20% chance of snow with highs near 19 and lows around 16. And Tuesday, snow mainly before noon with a high near 23 and a low around 7.
Standard Heating is celebrating 89 years of business this January, and you can save over $1,900 on a high-efficiency furnace and AC or boiler. Find more anniversary savings at standardheatingdeals.com. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, comfort you deserve.
Welcome back, pet appreciators. Welcome back to the Pet Connection Show here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Kathy Menard here, your host. And as many of you know, Dr. Nicole Perrault is off today, our co-host. She's in Orlando at a veterinarian convention. But Jason Rice is here. And if you're just joining us, he's been talking and filling us in on what he's going to be doing as a musher with the John Bear Grease Sled Dog Marathon up in northern Minnesota in the Duluth Plus area, so to speak. But, you know, before Jason, before we went into this last commercial break, you mentioned something, and I don't want to go back to it, but you mentioned something about a volunteer who accidentally made a mistake with the water at the Iditarod race. Now, that got me thinking, yeah. You know, when you're as a musher, and I'm sure board members play a role in this as well, but how much is it on the mushers or the kennels or the board to put together volunteers? Like, does the board get the volunteers, or do the mushers have to find the people to do that as well? And do you find your own veterinarians, or are there like just veterinarians and volunteers that are part of the Bear Grease Sled Dog Marathon and you just go with them?
So it all begins with the board organizing things, and there are different departments, if you will. One of the departments is the volunteer coordination. It takes anywhere from 400 to 800 volunteers, depending on the year, in order to put on this race. And they all have different backgrounds and bring different skill sets to the table. And so what we try to do is match people with what they would like to do in combination with what are they most capable of doing. It's safe to say that really with most races, the volunteer base comes from the race itself. So now on a secondary but related subject, every musher usually has a handling team. So people who are there at the checkpoints, at least for the Bear Grease, it's not allowed in the Iditarod, no handler, no outside assistance. The musher has to do everything themselves. The Bear Grease is different. At each checkpoint, there are there's your dog truck and your team of handlers can show up there to help you feed and water and booty and do all of those things. Then as far as the veterinary team is sought after by the Bear Grease Board. And we've been very lucky over the years to have some of the best vets literally in the world. People come from all over the U.S. who specialize in sled dog sports. So they know what to look for specifically with this type of a working dog. It's a different set of circumstances and different set of conditions that they're watching for versus a veterinarian who only is used to dealing with domestic house pets.
Makes total sense. And
yes, and so we're very pleased to have, for the past several years now, the repeat services and just so graciously performed by Dr. Greg Phillips from St. Paul. He is our chief veterinarian and has been for several years, and he's continuing on again this year as our chief veterinarian. There are several other vets who joined the team that he has put together who have got experience or are looking. In many cases, we have a nice team of support vets who come from the University of Minnesota veterinary medical program, and they're on their way to becoming vets on their own, and they are part of that support team as well. So that I think that that group perhaps goes a little unsung, but the U of M Veterinary Medical School really sends us a crew of people ready, eager, prepared to help, and then they learn from the experienced race vets those peculiarities that are very specific to working dogs, to dogs that are actually pulling. It's different than a cattle dog or a herding dog. These dogs, or even an agility dog, these particular circumstances that they're looking for involve wrists and shoulders and cold weather and body mass. How do they maintain their physique during the course of a multi-day race in cold weather? There's all kinds of things that are quite specific to only the world of dog sledding, and these vets are fantastic at it.
Makes perfect sense. What about the food? Now, I know the food is either brought in by vehicles or small aircraft or whatever. Do you, as a musher, and I know that you're very, you know, the dogs are affiliated with Ryan Reddington's Kennels. Is it the same food distributed to everybody, or do the mushers have some say in what they want for their dogs, or isn't it that much of a difference in terms of nutrition at that point?
Well, there are some commonalities, but every kennel has got its own go-to standby program, you know, that they believe in and that they've used before. It's probably a combination of economics. You know, what sort of funds do they have? How big is the kennel? How many mouths are they having to feed year-round? And you will notice different philosophies based on different mushers' resources, their location. What is their purpose? Do they have a small kennel of 8 or 10 dogs, or have they got a kennel of 50 to 100 dogs? And what is their purpose? Is that kennel largely recreational? If so, they may be feeding a little more simple type of a diet. Not as much science has gone into it. With the Reddington kennel, Ryan's family has been running in the Iditarod virtually since its founding. Ryan's grandfather was founder of the Iditarod, Joe Reddington Sr. And so there's been a lot of sled dog science that has gone on. Ryan does have a dog food sponsor as far as a kibble type of product. I can tell you that typically what he's feeding these dogs, and it ramps up during race time and as the temperatures drop, you usually want to feed a little more fat to keep some weight on them. They actually metabolize the fat as energy, and so it really doesn't pose a weight gain sort of a proposition. But Ryan's basic strategy is using very high protein. There are also powder supplements that go in that all just help with digestion. There are several supplements that he gives that are to aid in the digestion, because these dogs are going hot to cold. They're working very hard, and their digestive system is getting hot and getting taxed while they're running. and you need good caloric absorption. And so there's more of a studied science to it. When you look at people who do races like the Yukon Quest or the Iditarod, these 1,000-mile-plus races, they really, really, really are studying down to the ounce what all they're putting in to each dog versus, you know, feeding your favorite pet food from the local grocery store. You'll see very little of your local grocery store type of pet food, the Old Roy and the Purina One, not putting down those products, but that's more of a house pet type of a thing. And these dogs are eating a lot of actual fresh but raw beef, chicken, beaver, mink. There's a mixture of things. And depending on what fat content you want for your dogs to be taking in, you'll choose different meats. In fact, in some cases, it's even just frozen chicken skins because they're so high in fat, chicken and turkey skin.
Very interesting point. You know, you brought up the word, or you mentioned the word science a number of times. And I can't think of another way to describe it, that there is a science to the nutrition of working dogs.
There absolutely is. Every musher is looking for every advantage possible. What's the biggest advantage? Let's quantify it. What's the biggest possible advantage you could give yourself? It starts inside the dog. Is its engine being fed the right fuel? Is that fuel burning at the right temperature? Are the right elements being absorbed and soaked into that motor? Has it got the right lubrication? And then beyond that, the science goes to massaging, knowing how to tell the difference between just a little tightness like a human runner would feel versus an actual injury. And so the mushers work really, really well. I've noticed over 20 years of involvement with the Bear Grease, mushers are really eager to learn tips and tricks from the veterinary staff. And the veterinary staff is very willing to coach and help them be better working dog owners. Things like massage, things like what time do you feed your dogs? You don't necessarily want to feed them when they've just come in from a 50-mile run and they're at max heart rate. You want them to calm down a bit before you introduce food into that digestive system so that they actually get the best bang for their nutrition. It is down to a science of minutes. Ryan has a formula of giving just clear water immediately upon coming into a checkpoint, waiting a certain period of time so that their heart rate comes down, and then feeding. And that's something that's very individualized. He's just noticed that his dogs respond best with the timing and the type of food that he gives. Other mushers may have a completely different philosophy.
That's just fascinating. And I didn't know, maybe I knew but forgot, you know, the whole Reddington history with the Iditarod. You know, you mentioned that his grandfather, great-grandfather, somebody started it. And, you know, to me, it's just amazing how much that family has advanced and, you know, just how important they are to this whole nation and international sled dog racing, because this is, you know, it is something that is international. I mean, there's people that come from, well, right here for the John Bear Grease. I mean, there's four or five different states that are consistently represented. As well as Canada, yeah. And I know that there's other sled dog marathons throughout. I mean, I know France has its own, the Grand Odyssey or however it's pronounced. And,
yep.
You know, I know that there's different ones throughout the world. And so it's just interesting. And I think it's fascinating that you are connected, you know, so well, and so is the John Bear Grease, to benefit from the Reddington family's connections to, you know, the science and the sport of sled dog racing. And, you know, I know that there's times in the past where sometimes on occasion a musher here or a musher there or whatever might get, you know, sort of critiqued for, you know, are you sure the dog should be out there, you know, in this cold weather or whatever? And it's just amazing the science that goes into it. And to understand what these dogs can handle and to observe these dogs and know the little subtle signs of like warning signs. I just felt through this whole many years talking to you, Jason, I have become so much more comfortable and excited about it, educated about it. And Pet Appreciators, when I was up there last year, I had a blast and I could hardly wait until this year's race. You know what I mean? It's almost, I don't want to say addicting, but there's this incredible feeling of watching all these people. You know, it's like a huge network. It's like this huge family. And I'm running into just a few seconds here before the commercial break, so I'll try to finish. If not, I'll start on the other side with it. But Pet Appreciators, one of the things that just stole my heart with this whole thing is to watch how loved and cared for these dogs are. It's just truly amazing. But we're going into a commercial break. Please stay with us.
Hi, this is Laura, and I want to tell you about my family's favorite thing. It's our wood stove. We bought it about 14 years ago from Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces. And see, the wood stove has actually paid for itself because we can keep the main area that we live in toasty warm with this great moist heat. But more important than saving money, it has actually improved our lives. Having a fire simplifies life. It provides comfort. It sort of takes the chill out of winter.
I'm Peter Solak. In 1977, I started Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, and I experienced the simple joy of warming myself by a fire. I also realized that the place and the way we embrace fire has evolved in a diversity of forms and styles. So at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, we have brought together the widest selection of our fireplace products and technical knowledge in the Twin Cities. Our mission is to use our knowledge to help you choose the design and function that is right for you and your home.
Visit Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces today and find the right fire for you.
Hi, Gregory Rich, founder and chief at Habitation Furnishing and Design, and now I'd like to invite you to kill your Sunday evenings with me right here on AM 950 with Drink in the Style. It's a one-hour-long conversation of interior design, art, architecture, and pretty much anything else visual and aesthetic, all while enjoying some booze handcrafted by our friends at Mill Valley Kitchen. Can you think of a better way to spend Sunday evenings? Drink in the Style, Sundays at 5 p.m.
Supporting the best local and independently owned restaurants in the Twin Cities has never been easier. You'll find an expansive list of local dining options at eatlocalminnesota.com, from classic American comfort food to authentic flavors from around the world. Cafe Latte offers made-from-scratch soups, salads, sandwiches, and mouth-watering desserts. Stop in the wine bar and enjoy a unique pizza loaded with fresh vegetables and perfectly roasted meats. Over 30 wines by the glass, Cafe Latte highlights Washington State wines and is the perfect destination for date night or an evening with friends. 850 Grand Avenue, St. Paul. Victor's 1959 Cafe has been serving South Minneapolis traditional Cuban food for over 15 years. Victor's is open for breakfast and lunch daily and now accepts dinner reservations too. Stop in and try the Pollo Tropicale or the Sandwich Cubano, which was featured on Food Network. More at eatlocalminnesota.com.
Hi, this is Ken Hagland, host of the Minnesota Hospice and Healthcare Show, your source for elder care and caregiver solutions, inviting you to listen to our live call-in show airing on Saturdays from noon to 1. Each week, we provide answers to important questions regarding elder care and caregiver issues to help you and your loved ones plan for the future and enjoy your best quality of life. Please join us this Saturday from noon to 1 for the Minnesota Hospice and Healthcare Show and learn more about us at minnesotahospice.com.
Time goes by way too fast, Pet Appreciators, on Sunday morning. But anyways, one segment left, and there's a million things I want to ask Jason and get his feedback on. But Jason, I want you to say something about what I was just talking about. Like, you know, that whole sort of strong sense of family and just the relationship between the musher and the dogs. Because you know what? The starting line, Jason, last year, I was right there underneath the microphone or the loudspeakers, which probably wasn't the best place. But I was right there. I could see. you know, coming around the corner, you know, the mushers that are next in line to start off, you know, and they come around the corner and all the handlers are there and everybody's so happy and the dogs, they can't contain their excitement. They just want to jump out of their skin and then they get all lined up. And the coolest thing, the thing that sticks in my mind so much, Jason, is when the musher leaves the sled, puts the brake on, and goes to each and every dog, touches the dog, speaks to the dog, puts his head or her head, there's a lot of female mushers out there, pet appreciators, and they whisper to the dog. And they're just that one-on-one to each and every one of them. And then when it's about 15 seconds, they head back to the sled, unhook, handlers are ready, and the countdown is on, and off they go. And there's no looking back. I mean, it's like they're on this journey together. I love watching that. I loved watching that last year, Jason. And talk a little bit about that. What's it like for you?
That moment, yeah, I think you point out some very profound things that happen, and there's even more of them that the general public never gets to see. You see all the noise and commotion, the dogs howling and yipping and jumping and absolutely being theatrical and ready to go. And I know that when I walk up to the dogs before leaving on a run, it's to do a couple of things. Check and make sure everything looks hooked up right. And to reassure the dogs, you'd like to calm that excitement and harness it and make them realize in a calm way, we've got this. Everybody, I'm with you. We've done this before, and you're trying to add just a little bit of reassurance in there. The dogs love to do this, but they will literally, they'll excite themselves to the point of absolute explosion. And you want them to calm down because you don't want to run a million miles an hour on the first day, the very first leg of the race. And you're doing everything you can to say, here we go, guys, we're off into the woods. And once you get out there and past all the commotion at the start and people cheering and counting down and the high fives and the announcers, all of a sudden you're off into the wilderness with your dogs. And that's the moment that you really, really kind of crave. If you're in this sport for the right reasons, you really love to be out there with the dogs. I'll be honest. I have moments like even today. I'm afraid of. I have a fear inside of. What are we going to encounter? Are we going to encounter an icy spot in the trail? Are we going to take a turn a little too sharp and the sled tips over and I've got to hold on for dear life and make sure I don't lose that team? There's a certain amount of fear. So it's doing just as much for the musher to crouch down, be in the moment, be head-to-head and face-to-face with the team that is going to pull you through the woods very, very silently over the next 2-3 days. It's just as much about the musher calming themselves down, and the dogs help them do that. It gives me a sense of calm when I can just crouch down face-to-face for a few moments. And the dogs, particularly if you've got some nice, calm leaders, which I'm fortunate to have, they calm me down by just being face-to-face and head-to-head. They make me realize this is doable. We're going to accomplish this, and this commotion will soon be over, and we will be in the woods together as a team doing what we do. And so the connection is absolute. I think people feel it, and that's one of the reasons that when you see that heartfelt connection between people, between human beings and canines, and you see that this relationship can and is often deeper than anybody ever suspects, I think it's infectious to see that. You're seeing on public display the greatest connection between human and animal, and I think there's a lot of respect that garners. It makes people realize that that we can not only just have fun together, we can work together and accomplish great things together. look at service animals and look at the function that they perform in our lives, this race harkens back to the original service animal, a dog that provided a transportation that was reliable in wintertime when other forms were not available or were not reliable. There's a reason why the serum was run across Alaska to save villages by dog sled. It's because at the time, snowmobiles were not reliably going to, there was no mechanized device to get us there. It's proven over and over that a properly cared for team of dogs can take you farther than any machine.
Beautifully said. Just beautifully said. And in the last couple minutes, Jason, I just want you to maybe just briefly inform our listeners just about how it's so much of a family sport. I mean, families get involved with this. When I was at the starting line, it was fathers would go off, and then sometimes the mother would go off on another sled, or the daughter. You know what I mean? There's all ages involved with this, pet appreciators, family systems. I know there's a couple of twin girls from Lakeville, Minnesota, more south of the Twin Cities, that are participating in the junior team right now, or that will be on Sunday. And another positive thing about sled dog racing is that it's for both genders and all genders, and young adults, teenagers.
Sure. And yesterday we had 21 young mushers, all 14 or under, take part in what we call the Cub Run, and that's just a couple-mile run held up near two harbors. The kids have a great time. It's a way that the Bear Grease can actually continue to grow and ensure that there's interest and participation in the future by getting kids involved. And the kids absolutely have a blast with this. They only run one or two dogs. It doesn't take much to pull them around. And they kind of get the bug early on, but they also get this sense of achievement. I can do this. I can do this.
And that like you talk so eloquently about, the respect between the canine and the human. Pet appreciators, we've got 30 seconds left. I just want to thank Jason so much for calling in as he's driving to go practice a 50-mile run in the woods. We're going to be cheering for you, Jason, and I hope to make it up there again next weekend. But we're cheering for you. So proud of you. I hope you have the time of your life. And thanks again, okay?
Thank you.
We look forward to hearing from you again. Pet appreciators, that's it for the Pet Connection Show this week. I hope you're having a great weekend. Stay warm, stay safe, and we look forward to being with you next week.